Welcome to the Vital Voices Podcast, Power to Empower series. 2020 was supposed to be the start of a bold new decade. Instead, unprecedented global crises have radically shifted our reality and have put the life and death consequences of good leadership on display. Time and time again, we've seen that women leaders stand strong in the face of challenges. Women are stepping forward with creativity, compassion, using their courage to encourage others, their bold ideas to embolden communities, and their voices, positions, and power to empower us all. That's why we're celebrating their power, potential, and purpose. In our new book, Vital Voices, 100 Women Using Their Power to Empower, and bringing their stories to life on this podcast. In this series, we're speaking with women leaders about their journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their thoughts on leadership and the path forward. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Elise Nelson. Today, I'm honored to be joined by human rights activist and expert, Ravi Kant. This week, we're in the midst of the 16 Days of Activism to End Gender-Based Violence. It's a series of activation days meant to shine a light on the dark underbelly of violence that keeps so many in danger and fear and holds the world back, quite frankly, from achieving true gender equality. But like Vital Voices, Ravi and his brothers work beyond just the 16 days to end gender-based violence and achieve lasting change. They work 365 days a year. Ravi is the founder and president of Shakti Vahini, a pioneering organization working to end violence and abuses against women and girls in India. Their task is particularly hard in a country where rape cases have almost doubled in the last 17 years. He's embracing his power to make change and showing us that it's up to everyone, everyone, to end gender-based violence. Ravi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Alice.
And please, please give my very best to your brothers, Rishi and Nishi. I think we loved having you with us when we honored the three of you for the Voices of Solidarity. And it was wonderful for us.
Oh,
thank you. I'd love to just start by maybe having you explain to us how you got into this field. I mean, growing up, what inspired you to do the work that you do to stop violence and abuse against women and children? I mean, there must have been something either in the water or in the way that your mother raised her three sons that all of you are committed to the cause. It's unusual, and I think just really phenomenal.
I think it is our mother who raised us like that. And we were exposed to all these issues right from our childhood. We continued to read. We learned about the gender inequalities. We learned about the rampant violence which is in the society. We also learned about the silent suffering, you know, women. After suffering so much violence, they did not have a voice. And there was complete silence in the society. Not only we realized that it was about changing legislations and bringing in more facilities for access to justice, but also challenging cultural norms and also breaking the silence. So all of this combined together, we knew that what we had to do. And of course, yes, it's the raising which we got and the blessings of our mother.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you and your brothers worked together to create Shakti Vahini back in 2001. What was that experience like to be men on the front lines of change for primarily women and girls in India? Did people understand why you were so passionate about these issues?
I think it was a big challenge when we started out because, you know, at that time in the early 90s and in the starting of the century 2000, we had a lot of women leaders. Everywhere it was women talking about women's issues. And I thought that, yes, it is also a men's issue. We also need to, you know, to raise our voices. And therefore, when we were there, we were, you know, in a room filled up with women, wherever in meetings and consultations where we went, we raised our voices. It was, you know, a few men amongst a lot of women. But, you know, it was a very strong voice, because men are an important partner, you know, for ending violence against women, because we need to reach out to them. They are the people. And therefore, when we started working with on these issues, people did not take us seriously. Even when we were filing legislation, filing cases in courts, we were not being taken seriously, because it is very unusual to find men standing up on these issues in India that time. But of course, I think that over the years, with a lot of our hard work and dedication and continuous, you know, talking about these issues and delivering, you know, and helping victims to get access to justice over the many years, and making the right noises, making the right advocacy, working with the media, working with the government, working with law enforcement, slowly we got that space, and now we are being treated equally, and now we see a lot of men also coming out, and it's a great feeling, because and we know that our work is tough, because we have to bring out that silent men who continue to, you know, remain silent. We have to reach out to them.
Just shortly ago, I mentioned this horrifying statistic about the dramatic increase that rape cases have almost doubled in the last 17 years. Why do you think that's the case? Is it more people reporting, or are there actually more incidents of rape?
It's dramatically
more.
I think it's both ways. A lot of reports are coming in. Earlier, you know, when sexual abuse at homes used to happen with children and with women, people used to remain silent. But now there are legislations which empower women and children to come out and speak about. They get the protection of the law. Earlier, it was complete silence on these issues. Even like sexual harassment at workplace, there was no legislation on this. Now, there is an enabling legislation, and a lot of women are coming out and speaking up. So over the years, legislations have come in, and that has enabled and empowered, and there has been education, which has enabled and empowered a lot of women to come out where there was complete silence. So of course, that is one of the situation. There is an increased reporting, but on the other hand, we also see that the crimes are happening on a larger scale because of the various issues related to society, societal norms, and therefore, I think that it's both ways. It's both ways.
I know certainly that your organization now is coming up on your 20-year anniversary next year, which is very exciting. Can you talk a little bit about the work that you're doing today?
Our primary work continues to be on combating human trafficking across India. And we have been working very strongly in terms of in Eastern India, where we are collaborating with state governments and raising awareness on these issues, especially in high trafficking prone zones in the country. And then we are also working with law enforcement agencies and prosecution agencies to get access to justice to victims of human trafficking. And not only on the issues of on human trafficking, but we also work on issues related to gender-based violence. And we have, in 2018, we fought a 10-year battle in the Supreme Court and got a landmark legislation on honor crimes, and that legislation is such an important piece of legislation, which has impacted judgments on homosexuality, judgments of right to choice of marriage, and a lot of things. So we have worked a lot on all of these issues, and gender-based violence issues continues to be one of our prime work area, because we are working with a lot of these college students, youth, because we think that changing mindsets and challenging cultural norms are important issues to be dealt with while working on these issues. So on the one hand, where we work with law enforcement agencies and government agencies, on the other hand, we are reaching out to the new generation, youths, and you know, talking to them and creating leaders amongst them so that they can now raise their voices. And we need a lot of people to work on these issues. And that's why we are reaching out to a lot of young people also. We are working with university students, youth groups, and forming all these groups. And we have been partnering with the government on these.
And I know that each of you, you three brothers, have a different role that you play in the organization. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I have been primarily working on the law, legal aspect of the issues. Rishi works completely on media advocacy and bringing all these issues to the media. And Nishi works completely on working the administrative side of the organization, implementing the programs and projects, delivering results, you know. So a lot of these work, and so that's a huge combination. We are thankful to God because it's such a strong combination of having a person understanding media, understanding legislation, working on laws, and also, you know, getting things implemented on the ground and properly. So so these are our strengths, and it's really great to work together.
So obviously, COVID has dramatically impacted every country in the world. India is no exception, with 9.6 million cases and more than 140,000 deaths across the country. But of course, as many of us know, gender-based violence, Secretary General of the United Nations has called the silent pandemic, has been raging. In my country, in your country, really everywhere around the world, we've seen an increase in China as much as 50% in some regions. But, you know, in other places, 30%. Can you talk a bit about how COVID has impacted your work and the issues that obviously you care so much about?
I think the COVID pandemic has had a big impact into how on all these issues in which we work, and people have lost jobs. There has been a huge reverse migration in India. When the lockdown was announced, millions of migrant labor walked back to their homes, and that brought them back into their communities. There has been, people have lost their jobs, businesses are closed, and that has had a huge impact in terms of vulnerabilities which have been created. In our work, while working on issues related to gender-based violence, combating human trafficking, we are seeing a huge increase in domestic violence cases in the communities. We are also seeing a huge increase in terms of child marriages, especially in the high trafficking source zones of the country, where there's a lot of child marriages getting reported because of, and many of these child marriages will turn into human trafficking cases. It's a big problem in terms of where there's a lot of trafficking happening, because these child marriage cases, people are just, you know, disposing of their daughters, and it is also leading to a lot of vulnerabilities which will, when the lockdown ends and when the situation improves, it will have years of impact. We are also seeing the increase of child sexual abuse material. We are seeing increase of recruitment through online forums in terms of recruitment of victims. We are also seeing an increase in, you know, children getting impacted due to these issues because they are all out of school. Schools are closed, and it's a big impact. I think years of work which has went into, you know, to bridge the gender inequalities, it is going to get suffered because schools are closed. Lot of girl child are now in homes. They are now in homes for the last 9 months, and I don't know till when they will be in their homes because they can't attend schools. And this will lead to a huge dropout of girls from schools. It's going to be a big impact because years of work had, you know, strengthened the participation of girl child in education, and that is going to suffer because once parents think that the girl child is good in managing the home, then they will not send their daughters back to school. It will have a big impact. I think in India, especially in the rural areas, it is going to have a big impact in terms of the work which we have done on gender inequalities and gender-based violence.
So much of this work, obviously, is really based in culture, right? It's about how we value women and girls in our societies and really changing that behavior. One of the things that you do, obviously, by your presence, but also your work, is really showing men and boys that abuses of power are unacceptable, that really demonstrating that violence against women isn't up to women alone to solve, right, or to end. What are the ways that you have seen work best in terms of really working to create that sort of cultural change that I think we all know is needed?
I think one of the things is that in our communities, a lot of things are ingrained in the culture. The way people talk about girl child, the way people, you know, bring them up, a lot of things are ingrained in the culture. All these spaces are occupied by men in every forum you find, in parliament, in schools, everywhere it is, you know, it is mostly the participation of women is very less. So all these things are, of course, ingrained to culture. There is a lot of acceptability of gender-based violence. There's a lot of acceptability in the communities on violence against women. So these are things which require, you know, which require a lot of changing the mindsets and challenging the cultural norms. But that is where our work comes in, because we have to work and reach out to the communities. I think it is going to take years and years of work, but you know, we have to do reach out to people, because I find that in many communities there are a lot of people who are fence sitters who can be part of the challenge. And we have to bring these silent fence sitters in the community to really make a noise on these issues, to challenge the silence on these issues, and to speak up. I think that even in many of the communities, just speaking up on these issues, responding to violence and strengthening law enforcement responses, access to justice are all important. But the first thing which starts is to break the silence, to speak up. And I think that is very important in our work. And that is why we reach out and work with a lot of community youth leaders to see that people start challenging the cultural norms which lead to these inequalities.
So I know that you and your two brothers have dedicated your life to ending violence against women, to stopping and combating human trafficking. And obviously it's admirable, extremely admirable. And I think for those listening, you know, obviously they are probably in awe of what you've done and how you've dedicated your life to these issues. But what can they do? Not everyone obviously is going to dedicate their lives, but I think we can all be allies.
Yes, we can be allies. We can motivate people to join this work. We can make men allies. We can, you know, everywhere, every day, if we can make few people allies, I think the fight gets strengthened.
I so agree. But I think so many men, they feel, well, that's a women's issue. And of course, it's not a women's issue, as you and I know well. It's a societal issue. It's an economic issue. It's a, yes, you know, it's a humanity issue. How do you shift that mindset? How do you enable men to see that this is their issue to take on and really put that allyship into action?
I think because, you know, people are so passionate about their sister. They are so passionate about their mother. But, you know, just to make fun of other women, they will be indulging in. So that is where, you know, we have to reach out and to ensure that the amount of respect you give to your own sister, your own mother, that needs to be in the society also. And then I think in India, in our society, we see a lot of things are accepted. It is acceptability that this happens. Like people can, like husbands can beat their wives, and it is accepted. So that acceptability has to change, I think. That is, and that is where we need to, you know, talk to people and to tell them that it is about their own families. It is, if the community is suffering on these issues, one day that fire can also come to your house. If there are a lot of cases getting reported on violence against women or sexual offenses, one day our families can also get impacted. And that is where our work comes in. And I'm happy, you know, since 2012 onwards, and there has been a huge shift. There are a lot of young people, men coming out and speaking on these issues. We have seen a lot of these movements which have happened on sexual offenses cases, where a lot of young people, men are coming out. So I think that overall we need to really, you know, continue to raise awareness on these issues and telling men that it is one day your own family can get impacted if you don't raise a voice today.
So who are some of the people who've really inspired you? Obviously, beyond your mother, I know she was the ultimate inspiration growing up. But what are some of your other inspirations?
I think people who have, you know, challenged, you know, powers and like Mahatma Gandhi, Rabindranath Tagore, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King. These are all people who have, you know, really stood up against a lot of inequalities. So they inspire me. And also, I think that hearing Secretary Clinton speaking about women's rights are human rights, I think that is one of the very important quotes, I think, which really empowers us, because that is the key issue. It is about human rights. And I think that that line inspires us a lot. And I think that line will continue to inspire me a lot. Of course, it has been 25 years when she said this. But I think that it's a big, big quote which really inspires us, because everywhere it's all about human rights issues. It's about people.
So how do you use your power to empower? How do you use your power as a leader to empower others?
The knowledge we have gained, the working experiences which we have, the learning of the justice system, the way the government works, I think that, and how the how systems are working, I think that this learning which is with us is the power we have, and everywhere we can create young leaders who can raise their voices, and also men who can raise their voices, and we can empower them. And that is the work which we continue to do every day. Every day we work with interns, we work with a lot of young people, we continue to inspire. I know that our breed has to, you know, expand. People like us have to be there in each community. And that is what we intend to do, is to create more leaders within the communities by giving and sharing them the knowledge, and also inspiring them to continue to do this work.
Well, thank you so much for your inspiration, for your incredible work. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. And I wish you and your two brothers all the very best.
Thank you, Alice. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this special edition of the Vital Voices podcast. If you'd like to support our work with women leaders who use their power to empower others, you can donate to Vital Voices on our website at vitalvoices.org, or you can text VITAL to 41444. That's VITAL to 41444. See you next week.